Welcome to the Buckmaster Show. It is Tuesday, the 13th day of September 2011. I am Bill Buckmaster, your host for the Buckmaster Show, on the home of the Buckmaster Show, KVOI AM 1030, Southern Arizona's most powerful news talk station, and our simulcast partners, our friends listening in Globe on KJAA AM 1240, and down in Cochise County in Douglas, KAPR AM 930 in Douglas. The Buckmaster Show is always on the World Wide Web on our website, buckmastershow.com. We have live streaming of the show at buckmastershow.com, along with archiving at least the past couple of weeks' programs. Plus, the Buckmaster Show can be heard anytime at TucsonSentinel.com. The Tucson Sentinel is Southern Arizona's online news service. We are live Monday through Friday from noon to 1 on KVOI AM 1030 in the Voice Network. The lineup for today's show: can the humanities heal medical practice? We'll explore that question with Dr. Howard Spiro, a living legend in the medical profession and founder of the landmark Yale University Program for Humanities in Medicine. Also on today's show, your Tuesday Moneymaker Report from certified financial planner Shelley Fishman. The bottom of the hour, we'll talk about the growing concern over the hardness of Tucson's water, and we'll explore the question of just how much water do we need to sustain the growth in Arizona. The Buckmaster Show is interview-driven, and we encourage you to be part of the conversation. You can call us on the Buckmaster Show live line, 790-2040, or toll-free from anywhere in North America, 1-866-725-5467. You can email your questions at buckmastershow.com or submit them using the Buckmaster Show Facebook page. And if you have a story idea or a particular guest that you would like to hear interviewed, we encourage you to let us know. While technology has vastly improved the care doctors give their patients, it has increased the risk of losing the patients in their electronic images, their spirit, their minds, and the scans of their brains. So says Dr. Howard Spiro, Emeritus Professor of Medicine and the founding director of the Program for Humanities in Medicine at Yale Medical School. Dr. Spiro will be discussing bridging the gap between medicine and the humanities, which focus on the experience of illness and not on the disease itself, in a free presentation titled "Can the Humanities Heal Medical Practice?" That's open to the public. His talk will be sponsored by the Flynn Foundation, and that is from noon to 1:30 tomorrow afternoon in the auditorium at the Arizona Cancer Center, 1515 North Campbell. And Dr. Spiro joins us now on the Buckmaster Show live line. Dr. Spiro, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me. Let me make two corrections, though. One, I pronounce it Spiro.
Spiro.
Two, you were nice enough to call me a landmark. Usually at my age, I'm referred to as a fossil.
You start, well, my goodness, born in 1924 in Cambridge.
I'm 87, going on 88.
Yeah. And
God, it's either God's grace or good luck. You can choose.
And
also technology. Since we're going to be talking about technology, I have to say that without modern technology and modern medicine, I would not be sitting here in front of a bunch of medical students all eating their lunch and talking to you at the same time.
You joined the faculty of Yale Medical School in 1955 when you say there was much that physicians could not do and even more that we did not understand. But it was a time, you say, when we looked at patients, talked with patients, examined and treated them rather than their laboratory and imaging results. Where did we go wrong? Was it the technology overcoming the human side of medicine?
I don't think it's so much that we went wrong as that we placed our attention too much on the technology. As I indicated to you a few minutes ago, I wouldn't be around if we didn't have such wonderful technology. But I do think that what's happened is that medical students and residents are so entranced with the visions of the CAT scans and the PET scans and the ultrasounds and the echocardiographs, et cetera, that they forget the patient who has sort of generated them. I usually refer to the laptop docs. I think everybody by now knows about a laptop doc. someone who has to fill out an electronic medical record, who asks questions, which he or she gets from the machine, from the computer, and the patient answers them. In that way, the doctor is focusing on his computer and on the answers to the questions, and not to the patient who's answering them.
Well, isn't science enough for doctors? Don't they have their hands full with the science alone? Should they be worrying about the humanities?
Well, I guess the question is, do you want a doctor who's interested in your lysosomes, or do you want a doctor who's interested in you?
I want a doctor who's interested in me.
Thank you. And I think that's really the problem. It's not an enormous problem. It's something that gets in the way. It's more like a bump in the road. But continuously now, people seem to feel that the doctor's interested in the record and not interested in him or her.
What kind of reaction have you got, have you received from the doctors?
Well, I think in general, physicians are, you may be surprised to hear, polite. And so nobody's going to say that old damn fool in front of me. And I think in general, everybody has a kind of yearning to be a good doctor, to be a caretaker. That may not always be true in academic life, qua academic life. But in general, doctors have a high opinion of themselves, and they nourish that by being altruistic, generous, kind, considerate, etc. Whether they are is another question.
Do the doctors try too hard, in your opinion, to find a biological basis for illness?
Yes, indeed. I don't mean to step in your lines. That's exactly the point. What happens nowadays is in a therapeutic conference, let's say, the patient's presented, and the patient used to be there but is no longer allowed to be there for various reasons. And then the doctors get the images, and the CAT scans trump the patient. But whatever you see in a CAT scan is the truth. So that people generally want to treat what they see and not what the patient complains about. I like to call attention to gallstones. There are 47 million people with gallstones in the United States, and there are good indications for taking them out. But most people don't have any trouble. But once you find a gallstone on a study, it usually gets removed, unnecessarily, in my opinion. So I think the thing that really needs to heal the field is not so much the humanities, which I put into Epatre Les Bourgeois, but really listening to the patient, talking to the patient. Most important, listening to the patient.
And, you know, with these scans, Doctor, there's this increasing, the full body scans.
Right.
You could actually, from what I've read, you could find all sorts of problems on there that really would never bother the person their whole lifetime.
Amen. That's exactly the problem. Everybody, as I say, many people have gallstones. I used to tell the students that my mother died with gallstones in place. My grandfather died with gallstones in place. And I never passed by an ultrasound machine because I didn't want to find out that I had them. And in fact, when I did pass by an ultrasound machine for other reasons, I found I had them, but I'd pay no attention to them. But if a person who's not a medical doctor comes along and has an ultrasound for, say, dyspepsia or heartburn, and they find gallstones, the doctor's first reaction in the 21st century and in the 20th is to take them out. Maybe that's causing the trouble. The likelihood is that it isn't. And what we need is more doctors, more physicians who have the time, and that's the issue, and who get paid in this capitalist system that we live in for listening to the patients. Then they can make these decisions with the patient.
Dr. Spiro, we're ready with a call, if you'd be willing to take one.
We have
Robert ready to go. His question concerns doctors focusing on drugs and surgery. Go ahead, Robert.
Hey, doctor.
Hi.
Thank you for coming. Doctors always want to know what medicine you're on, whether you have allergies, if you're using illegal drugs, but they never ask what you eat. And I
they
think
never
everybody
ask what?
Agrees. What you eat. And I think everybody agrees that straws and forks are the most deadly weapons currently known to culture.
Well, in the electronic record that I was decrying a few minutes ago, you get extra points for pointing out to patients that they don't eat the right things. You get extra points for telling them to lose weight if they want to. But I agree with you. On the other hand, food is for fun and not for medicine. That's an aphorism of mine. I became a stomach doctor because I like to eat and I like to talk, and there's no better way of handling that.
Doctor, is it true that many people who go to see the doctor, 80% at least of the problems are really such that they don't even need to be there?
That's indeed the statistic that's been repeated over and over and over again. Obviously, it depends on the patient population. It depends on what kind of a doctor it is. But overall, and a physician was saying, a physician in Phoenix was saying that to me this morning, about 80%, 4 out of 5 people who go to a doctor need encouragement, need enthusiasm, need some kind of help. But a lot of the problems are social, economic, and these days, and other kinds of things. I'm going to try with these college medical students, I'm going to talk to them about that as soon as we finish this.
Okay, Dr. Spiro, I want to remind folks that you'll be love to see them tomorrow at your free presentation titled Can the Humanities Heal Medical Practice? It's open to the public and sponsored by the Flynn Foundation, noon to 1:30 in the afternoon in the main auditorium of the Arizona Cancer Center, 1515 North Campbell Avenue. Dr. Spiro, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me. Bless you.
And good luck to you.
Goodbye.
Thank you, sir. All right, that's going to be a bring it up to 1217 on the Buckmaster Show. Your Moneymaker Report every Tuesday. Certified financial planner Shelley Fishman joins me in studio. We're going to talk about money. That's next. Stay with us.
Want to lose weight? You're not alone. 2 out of 3 people in this country are now overweight. Using Dr. Gahn's Diet of Hope, created by renowned cardiologist Dietmar Gahn, you could lose 5 to 15% of your body weight in just 6 weeks. The program teaches proper nutrition and uses no drugs or artificial foods. Most insurance is accepted. To learn more, visit dietofhope.org or call 696-DIET.
The Arizona sun is intense regardless of the season. That's why you need Sierra Shutters and Sun Control, Southern Arizona's custom shutter specialists and proud supplier of O'Hare Shutters, locally manufactured blinds and state-of-the-art window tints. Our power bills are less after installing Sierra's 100% hardwood shutters and window tints in our home. Call Sierra Shutters and Sun Control 292-2212 or check out their extensive website, sierrasuncontrol.com.
Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero More, Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza, topped with the finest, freshest quality ingredients. Enjoy casual yet upscale dining while sampling our extensive boutique wine list. Vero More in Tucson at North Swan and Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veromorepizza.com. And now open in Oro Valley, Noble Hops, the Tucson area's first gastro pub.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is a very special place, offering a continuum of health care in a resort atmosphere. Splendido received 2007 Best of 50 Plus Housing Awards from the National Association of Home Builders for overall best continuing care retirement community and interior design. Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoAZ.net.
The RTA, delivering our promise to you during the past 5 years, completing over 400 projects, including 5 major roadways and the launch of Sun Express and Sun Shuttle Transit services, with 30 projects underway, including the intersection of Alvernon and Valencia and Camino Seco to Houghton along Speedway Boulevard. Please watch for workers and obey all traffic signs. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel in our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
Since 1959, Assistance League of Tucson has helped thousands of disadvantaged men, women, and children in the Tucson area. Donated items, thrift shop proceeds, volunteer hours, and financial gifts help support our philanthropic programs like Operation School Bell. Your generosity continues to change lives in our community. For more information on how you too can make a difference, visit us at AssistanceLeagueTucson.org. Assistance League of Tucson, volunteers working together.
Let Karimi Oriental Rugs keep your valuable area rugs looking like new with Tucson's finest cleaning, repair, and restoration services. Karimi specializes in restoring antique, silk, and Navajo rugs with 100% satisfaction guarantee. Karimi Oriental Rugs appraises and purchases quality rugs and offers a vast selection of hand-woven rugs from around the world. Be sure to stop by Karimi Oriental Rugs at Fort Lowell and Dodge or on the web at KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
Shelley Fishman, CFP, is a financial services professional located at Pyramid Federal Credit Union. The opinions voiced on this program segment are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your financial advisor or tax advisor prior to investing.
And it is time for the Tuesday Moneymaker Report with certified financial planner Shelley Fishman. Shelley, good to see you.
Bill, how are you?
I'm doing real well. And, you know, a subject you care a lot about and I care, and many of the local talk show hosts, I'd say all of them here on KVOI, is Tucson needing business. And we're going to be putting together the radio station, actually the first 100 listeners who would like to attend this Tucson Needs Business Rally, and I know you're going to try to be there.
Oh, absolutely.
This is going to be Wednesday, September 28th at 5:30 in the afternoon. It is free. It's at the Marriott University Park Hotel, and I think 20 folks have already signed up. So go to the KVOI.com website, register there, and you will be in and ready to go to the business rally, because we need business. And I know that was the theme while I was away up in Canada.
Absolutely.
When you were hosting for me, is talking about Tucson and business.
No, it's right consistent with what's so important to this community right now.
And everybody's talking about, we got to get more jobs to this community. And the president's talking about putting together and has presented this, it's nearly, I think, half a trillion dollar
job. Yeah, it's 480 something billion dollars, but a billion here, a billion there.
What are you gleaming from that report,
well,
or the package?
I must say I'm disappointed. I'm disappointed for a couple of reasons. Three quarters of that package appears to me to be stimulus and not in the short term affecting jobs. One quarter of it, or one third of it, depending upon how you measure it, is going to be immediately stimulating jobs, and that's the infrastructure piece, the piece of putting people to work on so-called shovel ready, but stuff that you don't have to get environmental approvals for, repairing schools, repairing roads, that kind of thing. Stuff that's repairing, stuff that's already there.
Right.
That should immediately produce demand and produce jobs. The part that would extend unemployment benefits, that money is always spent instantly, so it has a multiplier effect and will affect demand in the economy. So that will be stimulative. That's good. The tax breaks, on the other hand, are much more questionable. Part of the tax break package is to cut payroll taxes, extend and further deepen the payroll tax cuts. That gets into all of our pockets. Not clear that we actually spend that money. Some people have said that a lot of that money gets saved, or if it does get spent, it gets spent in ways that don't have a multiplier effect. We're going to add those cuts to the employer part of that payroll tax withholding. That'll give small businesses more money, but it's not clear that small businesses don't already have plenty of money. There's a couple of $1 trillion in cash sitting on the sidelines right now, so I'm not sure why we need to give businesses even more. The reason they're not hiring and not building new stuff is because the demand is overseas. It's not here domestically.
And the markets really haven't reacted. Well, have they reacted dramatically? Yes, they did, didn't they?
On Friday, the day after the speech, the markets tanked 300 and something points.
Dramatic, yeah.
Looked like that was going to continue on Monday. The word was the reason they tanked was because of uncertainty in Europe again about the fate of the, well, there are a couple of things. There was the central bank, the European Central Bank, lost its president, and then there was this ongoing melodrama about Greece and Italy and Portugal and Spain and all the places that we want to be in the summer.
A melodrama that every time I look at it, it doesn't seem to have any end.
No, and you know, one can't blame the Germans and in part the French for not wanting to bail the Greeks out. The Greeks need to start paying their taxes, and they're not doing it, and they're complaining bitterly about all these cutbacks. What will eventually happen if they don't find a way to fix this problem is Greece is going to find itself out of the EU and on its own currency again. They'll find themselves in part bankrupt. The Germans are already planning how to protect their banks from that kind of bankruptcy. That, in part, is what caused the drop in Friday. And then on Monday, you know, we thought it was going to continue. Yesterday, the markets opened down 100 and something points, dropped over 200 points down, and wound up, don't ask me how, in the last half hour, up 88 points. Today, we get the mirror image of that. And the markets were up for most of the day, and as of a couple of minutes ago, flat.
What's going on? Is it confidence now?
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's confidence. It's predictability. It's just that people are scared to death. And so you don't have a lot of money coming in from individual investors. And what money you do have is going to very conservative things. So the bond rally, the so-called bond bubble, I don't think it's a bubble. I think it's got a good, sound basis. It's not built on sand. But that rally continues because people are fleeing to safety. And so with all that money sitting on the sidelines and individual investors not coming in, volume tends to be low, both in terms of number of shares and dollar volume. And so when somebody makes a move, it causes huge volatility. Then you get all these computer programs. You know, we've got to the point now that the computer programs that control the market and that actually buy and sell are now within fiber optic distance of each other, you know, 20 feet away in New Jersey. And these trades are happening within nanoseconds of things going on. And so you get these wild swings, and that just tends to spook people even more. So it steamrolls, Bill.
And for the investor, what should they be remembering at this?
They should
through
be
all of this?
Remembering that they need to be properly diversified, properly allocated. They need to be more conservative with their investments than they've ever been in their lives. Forget all the old rules. It's time to be conservative. It's time to realize that the markets are not going to move in the ways they did throughout most of the 20th century. We're in a 6% world now, and we're going to be there for a couple of years, I believe. Therefore, if I have a 6% investment that's very, very safe because it's essentially fixed income bonds, or a 6% investment that's in growth stocks that has a tremendous amount of risk, well, for the same 6%, where do I want to be? I want to be heavily weighted toward fixed income. That's what a lot of people are doing right now, and that's one of the reasons you get so much volatility on the equity side.
But we do call this segment Money Maker, so
you can make money
even though you're being conservative and watching what's going on.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, are you going to make 20 or 30% if you're working that way in the equation? No, of course you're not. But when banks are paying 1%, when the Treasury is paying 2% for a 10-year bond, you know, making 6 or 7, some of it tax-free because it's in munis, ain't bad.
Shelley, where can folks get a hold of you?
795-7950 or shelleyfishman.com. Either way, get a hold of me and we can review your portfolio and just take a look at how I can help.
Shelley Fishman with the Moneymaker segment every Tuesday on the Buckmaster Show at about 12:20 every Tuesday afternoon. Shelley, have a great week.
You too, Bill.
Thanks a lot. Coming up on 12:30, this is the Buckmaster Show. Stay with us.
The opinions voiced in this program segment are for general information only and are not necessarily those of LPL Financial, Pyramid Federal Credit Union, or this station. Shelley Fishman, CFP, is a financial planner located at Pyramid Federal Credit Union. Securities and insurance products offered through LPL Financial and its affiliates. Member FINRA. Pyramid Federal Credit Union is not a registered broker-dealer, nor is it affiliated with LP Financial.
SRN News, I'm Rich Thomason in Washington. President Obama is challenging Congress to pass his jobs bill immediately. The president's on the road today speaking in Ohio. Republicans in Congress say they will not pass any measure that would raise taxes. They say raising taxes is a jobs killer. With long-term unemployment leaving millions of Americans struggling, the ranks of the nation's poor have swollen to an all-time high, according to census figures. The Obama administration says it will not allow today's assault on the U.S. Embassy and other buildings in the Afghan capital to deter the U.S. mission there. Checking Wall Street, heading into the final half hour of today's trading, the Dow is up about 9 points, the NASDAQ Composite Index ahead 33, and the S&P is 9 points higher. More details at srnnews.com.
Sierra Shutters and Sun Control is the leader in quality hardwood O'Hare brand shutters in Southern Arizona. 100% customer recommended and satisfied. Sierra Shutters and Sun Control also has the highest quality blinds, shades, and state-of-the-art window tints that really make a difference in keeping your home cooler. Check out their extensive website at sierrasuncontrol.com or give them a call at 292-2212 for a free in-home estimate.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is one of Southern Arizona's crown jewels. You will find that the services and amenities offered at Splendido rival those of a fine resort. But what sets Splendido apart is a continuum of health care that allows for a full life today, knowing tomorrow is secure. As a true continuing care retirement community, Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoAZ.net.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
There are times when you save, and there are times when you
save big.
Whoa. Take vehicle loans, for instance. Any time of the year, Pyramid Federal Credit Union can help you save with lower rates. But now, for a limited time, we're helping you
save big.
That means rates as low as 4.5% APR when you buy or refinance a vehicle loan. Plus terms up to 60 months, whether it's new or used. You won't just save. You'll
save big.
That never gets old. Stop by any Pyramid Federal Credit Union or visit us at pyramidfcu.com to learn more. That's 4.5% APR vehicle loans for a limited time. Plus, save another 0.25% with payment options.
That's huge.
Pyramid Federal Credit Union. Improve your financial life. Learn more at pyramidfcu.com. 4.5% APR on vehicle loans for a limited time. Restrictions may apply. Membership eligibility required. NCUA insured.
If you're having foot or lower back pain, you're not alone. My foot doctor recommended custom foot orthotics created by Bob Novak. Bob is a certified pedorthist and best in Southern Arizona at creating just the right foot support at a price you can afford. Please give Bob Novak, the owner of Arizona Limb and Brace, a call at 795-2553 or visit Bob at Rosemont and 5th. I did, and my feet thank me every day.
It's 12:34. This is the Buckmaster Show. The home of the Buckmaster Show is Southern Arizona's most powerful news talk station, AM 1030 KVOI, and of course our simulcast partners in Douglas and up in Globe. And for the next half hour on the Buckmaster Show, we're going to be discussing water. First, the trend toward harder water in the Tucson area and the hard choices facing the Tucson community. Then at about 12:45, we'll talk with the author of a new report from the Arizona State University-based think tank known as the Morrison Institute, which concludes that the region's water supply can only support more people if we get rid of all commercial farming. But first, we begin with Fernando Molina of Tucson Water, who joins me in studio. We're going to be talking about the growing problem with hard water in Tucson Water service area. Fernando, good to see you.
Well, good afternoon, Bill. Thank you for having me here.
Well, it's a pleasure. And before we talk about hard water, the news from Tucson Water this week is a notification letter that was sent out to customers. What's this about?
Well, Bill, since about last fall, we've been keeping our mayor and council updated and informed on the issue of dioxane 1,4 dioxane contamination. And this is coming out of the area, the cleanup area that is south of in the southern part of Tucson. It's a Superfund site. More people are probably familiar with the trichloroethylene, or TCE, that we've been cleaning up there since the early 90s.
How long is that cleanup going on?
Well, it'll go on for quite some time. We actually are seeing improvements. If we look at maps showing the plume 10 years ago and compare it to now, we are seeing some impact on there. The dioxane came up as an issue about 2002, 2005, somewhere out there, when the EPA notified Tucson Water and actually several other jurisdictions across the country that were involved with TCE cleanup programs, and they were beginning to detect 1,4 dioxane. This was an ingredient that was used as a stabilizer for the TCE that was being used, so it was extending the life of this. We didn't really have the ability to detect dioxane and even low levels of dioxane until that period of time. So that's why it came about later, after all the decisions and agreements related to the TCE cleanup were made in the 90s.
Now, the letter does explain that the water delivered to the area does meet or exceed all federal drinking water standards and is safe for drinking, cooking, and bathing. So there's no real immediate health concern
here. No. And what we wanted to do is just reassure our customers in the zone which receives the water that comes from the TARP plant that the water is safe to drink. We have been working with the EPA since the initial notification. So we knew some changes were going to come about. The initial health advisory level was established at 3 parts per billion. This is back in 2005, 2007 when we first received the notification. Our initial response was to make sure that we were not exceeding that. And we actually have been able to do that operationally by blending water coming out of the TARP plant. And I suppose I need to step back a little bit and explain the TCE cleanup process and the facility that was developed and built to remove the TCE does not remove 1,4 dioxane. So what we were doing at that point was blending water from other sources to reduce the level of dioxane in the water. Now, one of the things that we were very well aware of was that EPA was conducting a risk analysis of that 3 parts per billion, and we were pretty certain that they were going to reduce it. We just didn't know to what level. And earlier this year, the EPA released their findings and reduced it from 3 parts per billion to 0.35 parts per billion. So that's a significant drop. Operationally, we're still doing the same thing. We're adding clean water from other sources to dilute it down. We have set up monitoring points throughout the distribution area to ensure that it is safe to drink, and it's still non-detectable. So we're working hard to make sure that the public is receiving quality water.
Fernando Molina is with us from Tucson Water, and I want to talk a little bit about our hard water. The water is getting harder in the Tucson area. What's that mean for the consumer?
Well, for the consumer, as mineral levels rise, we begin to have more problems with scaling. Most of our customers probably what might notice is more white buildup around faucets, areas where you're evaporating
water.
In the shower, your coffee pot, anywhere that you're heating water. So your water heater might get a greater accumulation of minerals quicker than it used to in the past.
Might wear out the water heater a little faster.
Yes, for those electric heaters with the element inside. Same thing with coffee makers. So it's something that we've always had hard water here. It just has gotten harder as we have begun to import more and more Colorado River water through the CAP canal system.
This fall, the Tucson City Council will consider whether it should try to stop that trend of the water, the mineral content going up by spending, well, my goodness, up to $415 million on three treatment plants to hold down the water mineral content to about 450 parts per million. That's a little less than the current levels. So the community has to really open this dialogue and start talking about this, right?
Well, yes, Bill. And, we actually went to the community several years ago. I don't know if perhaps some of your listeners recall that we were out in the malls around town and actually going out to
the water
different
testing
events. We had to take a choice between water that was developed at 450 parts per million and 650 parts per million. The 650 parts per million represents the kind of the higher end of the average mineral content of Colorado River water. It's a little higher than what we normally find here, although we do have areas of groundwater that are already higher than that. So we did two things during that time, if people remember. We asked you to taste some samples and then comment on which your preference was in terms of taste or flavor. And then once we had that information, we talked to those folks that participated in this test about what the cost would be to build the plant and operate it to reduce the mineral level to 450 parts per million, and what the cost would be to not do something. So essentially, we interviewed over 14,000 people, and the final results came in that about 50% of those folks felt that they preferred the 450, including the cost in there. But about, if you took into the consideration the 650 and the people that really had no preference, it was about a 50-50 split. So that really forced us to go back and take a much closer look and do some more studies in terms of what the actual cost might be.
So if the city does nothing, the mineral levels will ultimately increase, I guess, by almost 35%. To reach the natural level of the Colorado River water.
Bill, it probably would never get to the level of the Colorado River water. And the reason is we will still have some groundwater in there that would dilute it a little bit. So we don't anticipate that it would ever get much higher than 600 parts per million. The cost to the community for that, our individual homeowners and businesses, would be maybe replacing things like water heaters a couple of years sooner than they might, evaporative coolers, things of that nature. Maybe using more laundry detergent. So there's our cost to not doing something. Those are borne by the individual consumers. Now, the cost to develop a treatment plant and build it and operate it, of course, that's borne by the whole community. And our estimates now, as you said, was about $450 million to build these plants.
$415 million would be on the top end. But, of course, I would think as the price on that might be going up is...
It's yes. Well, we don't know yet. Yeah. I mean, this is what we want to go to mayor and council and talk about. The average Tucson water ratepayer would probably see an increase of $11 to $12 a month on their water bill if we were to construct the plant. So we're talking about two things. We're talking about the cost to construct the plant, which the estimates right now range from $350 to $450 million. And the annual operating cost would be about $10 million a year. It's a very energy-intensive process, number one. Number two, we end up with a lot of waste material because it's a reverse osmosis process. We end up with a brine that we have to handle and deal with that waste somehow. And those two things in and of themselves are fairly costly in the long run.
You know, going back to that taste test, how did people, which of the tastes came out on top, the 450 or the 650?
You know, I think if you just looked
at... Or was it pretty much split?
If you looked at taste, I think probably most people preferred the 450. But when we added the consideration of the cost, it really balanced out 50-50 for those that preferred 450 over either didn't care or the 650 was good enough.
So this is a decision that will be up to the council, and is there any kind of a timetable on this?
We anticipate going to our mayor and council with this information sometime this fall. We don't have a date set yet, but we do anticipate doing that, and we'll get direction from our mayor and council at that point. In the meantime, the recommendation going to mayor and council includes a couple of other items, because the staff recommendation and the Citizens Water Advisory Committee endorsed this. They want us to continue to allow it to increase, but we would monitor. We would monitor the impacts, and we would also develop a long-term plan to deal with the salinity.
Fernando Molina, thank you from Tucson Water. Thanks for being on the Buckmaster Show.
Thanks for having me here.
Thanks a lot. Coming up now on 1245, we're going to talk water with the architect of a new report from the Morrison Institute, a think tank up at ASU, and they've just come out with a big report on water. That's next on the Buckmaster Show.
With 2 out of 3 people in this country overweight, you're not alone in wanting to shed some pounds. Now you can lose 5 to 15% of your body weight in just 6 weeks using Dr. Gahn's Diet of Hope. The physician-supervised program created by renowned Tucson cardiologist Dietmar Gahn and certified nutrition counselor Elizabeth Gahn. To learn more about Dr. Gahn's Diet of Hope, call 696-DIET or log on to dietofhope.org.
Vero Amore presents Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza using fresh, homemade mozzarella and the finest quality toppings. Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero Amore. Casual yet upscale dining with an extensive boutique wine list. Vero Amore in Tucson on North Swan at Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veroamorepizza.com. And now in Oro Valley, Noble Hops, the Tucson area's first gastro pub. Listed on the National Register of Historic Places and founded by Isabella Greenway, Arizona's first congresswoman, the Arizona Inn is still the standard bearer for luxury hospitality in Midtown Tucson, just minutes from the University of Arizona. Founded in 1930, the Arizona Inn continues to win top honors for hospitality and dining. Travel and Leisure magazine names the Arizona Inn one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. And the Arizona Inn is proud of its AAA 4-diamond status for both the hotel and dining room. Whether it's for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, or a private event, you can count on Chef Allison's featured seasonal culinary creations to please. The Arizona Inn, a special oasis of hospitality in Midtown Tucson, 2200 East Elm, and on the web at arizonainn.com. From antique to contemporary, Persia to Pakistan, Tibet to Turkey, Karimi Oriental Rugs brings the world to Tucson at the corner of East Fort Lowell and Dodge. Owner-operator Amir Karimi personally selects the world's finest exquisite hand-woven rugs. Sale, purchase, wash, repair, restore, and appraise. East Fort Lowell and Dodge for Karimi Oriental Rugs and KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
The RTA, delivering our promise to you during the past 5 years, completing over 400 projects, including 5 major roadways and the launch of Sun Express and Sun Shuttle Transit services, with 30 projects underway, including the intersection of Alvernon and Valencium and Camino Seco to Houghton along Speedway Boulevard. Please watch for workers and obey all traffic signs. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel in our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our citizens realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and create a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in and support of education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's Pima Community College students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a literate, prosperous, thriving Tucson and Pima County. During these extraordinarily tough times, our funding is in serious jeopardy. And as budgets get even tighter, we'll have to cut back services just when people need us the most. So please support us in our ongoing effort to build a better tomorrow. Help us provide the education and resources that the people of Pima County need today. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us on the web at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
It's 12:49 on the Buckmaster Show. I am Bill Buckmaster on AM 1030 KVOI, the voice, Southern Arizona's most powerful news talk station. We continue now our discussion on water with a look at a new report from the Arizona State University-based Morrison Institute. The report is Watering the Sun Corridor, Managing Choices in Arizona's Megapolitan Area. This is produced, as I say, by the Morrison Institute for Public Policy, authored by Grady Gamage Jr., an attorney, author, and land water expert. He's a senior research fellow at the Morrison Institute, a nonpartisan center for research, analysis, and public outreach at ASU. Mr. Gamage, thanks for being with us.
Glad to be here.
Tell me what you set out to, some of the questions that you wanted to be answered in this report on water.
Well, there were kind of two things that I really wanted us to try to accomplish here. One is that there's been a almost a drum roll of reports from outside Arizona lately that have created a national impression that we are either out of water or on the verge of running out of water, and that the situation is quite desperate. Whole series of them that have rated Arizona low on sustainability metrics, on the Arizona story is done feel to it. So I wanted to try to answer those because I thought most of them were very unsophisticated and inaccurate analysis. And then the second thing I wanted to do is there's been a tendency in Arizona, even within the state, either to want to portray our water situation as a crisis or to go to the opposite extreme and to say, oh, quit worrying about it. Everything is fine. We can accommodate millions and millions of more people. It's not a problem. Don't worry about it. And the reality is in between those two things. And so that's kind of the point I was trying to make here.
And Mr. Gamage, the question that seems to come up all the time when we talk about water, at least here in Southern Arizona, is why do we keep encouraging growth if our water future is in doubt? And I will put a little asterisk by that because Marshall Vest, the UA economist, was on our Friday program here on the Buckmaster Show, and he says the growth rate right now and for the future, immediate future, is basically flatlined here in Arizona.
Yeah, and we actually hired Marshall to do the growth projections that we put in this report. The Morrison Institute had done an earlier 2008 report about growth rate in the Sun Corridor, and the Sun Corridor is basically Maricopa, Pima, and Pinal County. It goes a little bit beyond that, but that's the heart of it. So Marshall dialed back the projections quite a lot here. Although this report goes out to 2030, 2040 range, so it goes quite a ways out. And Marshall's figures out there are that we're still likely to wind up with about 9 million people within that time frame in the Sun Corridor, and we're at more like 6 or today. So there's still significant growth there. The answer to your first question is why do we keep encouraging growth when we're running out of water is we're not running out of water in any immediate sense. And we can continue to grow. The real question is how do we want to grow? How do we want to use the water supplies we have, and what kind of growth do we want to have in terms of densities, in terms of locations, and in terms of the trade-off of a lot of different kinds of water use. Do we want to preserve agriculture in any form? Or are we content to have it go away completely, which is kind of our current policies, that we've never really debated it. What do we want to do about landscaping? Because that's really the big question. We could accommodate plenty of people here if we quit trying to transform the landscape. Should we or should we not? Those are the sort of questions we tee up at the end of this report, hoping that people will begin to really talk about and debate the different public policies.
And generally speaking, we in the Tucson area have done a better job, I think, than you and your fellow residents up in Phoenix when it comes to the watering and the landscaping. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I would, although I'd put a footnote on that, which is Tucson and Phoenix are very different places. They're very different places historically, and they're very different places in terms of the amount of water they've had. Tucson is a desert community. Phoenix is a farming community in the desert. And so we grew differently, and I don't want to undo some of the historic landscape of Phoenix, the green areas, Encanto Park and the downtown historic districts and so on, because I think that's an important part of the historic fabric of Phoenix. But I think as we grow into the future, there's no question that we must look more like Tucson than the way Phoenix has looked in the past. And that's one of the things the report talks about.
Grady Gamage Jr. is with us. He's the author of a new report from the Morrison Institute up at ASU. If you have any water questions that you would like to work in here before we close out, 790-2040, 790-2040. So there were several questions that we have not addressed that were in the report. Do we need to perhaps alter how we live by doing little things like banning swimming pools? And I understand that the Metro Phoenix area, nearly 30% of the residents have a private backyard pool. That's got to be one of the highest percentages in the world.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, as the owner of a private backyard swimming pool in Phoenix, you sort of don't realize how much water is being lost to evaporation. The average backyard swimming pool at a private home loses about its entire volume, or about 10,000 gallons every year, to evaporation. Now, you know, evaporation doesn't mean the water's gone away, but it is a very consumptive use of potable water. And one of the questions that I think we have to face going forward is whether or not it makes sense to continue to have that many pools. And how do you answer that question? Do you just make it a market function by allowing the price of water to rise? Or do you make it a regulatory function where you say you can only have one swimming pool for each little community area? Or do you just try to educate people about the costs and the relative trade-offs? Those are all possible alternatives that we're going to have to start debating one of these days.
Going back to what you said at the beginning, that there's a lot of national reports have been coming out about what is perceived as a current water crisis in Arizona. Is that coming from reports of this intense competition for Colorado River water, or where is that coming from? Perhaps the sustained drought we're in?
Yes, I think some of it is the drought. I think some of it is the increasing focus on sustainability. And that word that is the buzzword we all use today, talking about cities and the way they grow and develop, when you say Phoenix and sustainability, there's an immediate reaction on the part of people who live in other parts of the country that, well, of course, Phoenix isn't sustainable. It should never have been there in the first place, is a phrase that a urban commentator used a while back on the radio that I heard. And I really disagree with both of those conclusions. I don't think because our water comes from far away, for example, is a criticism that is made in a lot of reports, I don't think that's any different than the fact that steel and cement come from far outside of every city's boundaries. Cities are concentrations of people that draw for their resources on a larger geographic area. And water's a resource that is transportable, just like cement and steel and concrete and food, for that matter, are all transportable. So I don't think there is an appropriate automatic conclusion that the Sun Corridor is a bad place for people to live, or that it is bad to move water a long distance to allow people to live here. I disagree with that as a fundamental proposition.
How come the, did you get into water harvesting in the report?
You mean rainwater harvesting?
Yes, sir.
No, not very much at all. This report really looked at very high-level growth figures of how much water there is to support the Sun Corridor. One thing we did talk about is one of these national reports I'm talking about looks at how much rain falls in Maricopa County compared to how much water is used in Maricopa County. And as you can imagine, there's a lot more water used than falls in rain in Maricopa County.
Especially this summer, huh?
Right, exactly. And as a result of that difference, and then building in some assumption for climate change, they conclude Maricopa County is unsustainable. Well, there hasn't been enough rain falling in Maricopa County to support the people who live here for more than 1,000 years.
And we're going to have to...
That's what the HOHOCOM figured out, that they could move water.
Going to have to leave it right there. Grady Gamage, Jr., thanks for being with us.
Glad to do it.
Okay, and that report is available at the Morrison Institute's website. That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. The Buckmaster Show is brought to you in part by Flowers, Rieger & Associates, certified public accountants. They are located, Mike Flowers and the gang, over at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com. If you need any accounting services, I'm telling you, Mike Flowers is the guy to contact. That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show, the Tuesday edition. The Wednesday edition is coming up at noon to 1, right here on KVOI, The Voice. Have a great afternoon.
KVOI, Cortero, Tucson. 930 KAPR Douglas and 1240 KJAA Globe, the Voice Radio Network.